Mr. Chalmers, Reel 6. We were talking about your time with the 1st Northern Rhodesian Regiment in Ceylon, on jungle training mainly, between round about March to June 1944. Is there anything else about this period you'd like to tell us or you can remember?
Well, I was mainly with D Company then, a very agreeable lot. Incidentally, when they're talking about NCOs, there we certainly had an old regular company sergeant, white company sergeant major, Bill Bailey, and company quartermaster sergeant Charlie Cox. And they were very much part of the company.
How did you get on with them?
Very well. The company commander and the second in command and the two and one other subaltern and Charlie Cox were very keen bridge players. Bill Bailey and I were not, and we tended to play cribbage in the evening. We all stayed together.
They're very much the same type of officer as you had with the 7th. And
yes, my company commander, in fact, was a relative of some friends of mine in Edinburgh. He had been in the colonial service in Northern Rhodesia before the war. The second in command was actually a regular. He'd been commissioned just before the war, and he was. Yes, he's since I've met him since he's and. The other subalterns, one other subaltern, Morm, who was a Southern Rhodesian, and then myself, and we had one platoon commanded by an African platoon commander.
Now, how was he treated? Was he part of the mess, or was he separate?
No, he was separate. He was very much, he messed in with the African sergeants.
So, although he's an officer, he was treated as an
NCO. Strictly an officer, no, at that stage. It was before.
So he was just a senior NCO, basically.
Indeed, yes, given slightly different duties, really, to what he would have had as a sergeant major.
And the composition we've talked about, was the composition again the same as it had been with the KAR and the 7th, a mixture of these various tribes, but the same basic thing?
Yes, indeed.
Well, did you get on with them any better or any worse with it? Just a normal bunch of lads?
Very much the same, really. They were agreeable lot and an agreeable mixture.
So you had no problems with them?
Not really, no. No.
Now, anything else? Because you became brigade liaison officer. Did that happen in Ceylon?
Yes.
How did that happen?
It was a technicality in Ceylon, but each brigade had to... Each battalion and brigade was supposed to appoint a brigade liaison officer, who then became... officially a member of the brigade staff, the junior element of that.
And that was which brigade?
The 21st East African Infantry Brigade. It was then commanded by Brigadier John McNabb, and who was a Cameron Highlander, and I think that my choice was leading to the fact that I also was a Cameron.
Well, can you give us a little portrait of what was McNabb like? MACNAB, was it? What was he like?
He was... I have a very great regard for him. He was a regular soldier who had, before the war, volunteered for service with the KER, actually the Nyasaland battalions of the KER. Yes, he was a great character.
We'll perhaps come to more about him when you actually get tangled up with him. Yeah. So this was just, at the moment, in when you weren't in action, a nominal appointment almost. You were just made...
Made with my platoon, yes.
And you didn't have any particular duties at the time?
I think I probably tended to get more, where there were odd jobs to be done, like loading, looking after things, loading of ships and things like that.
Well, let's look to them. Unless there's anything else about the time before you went to Burma, let's look at the move then, because it's quite a big job moving it. The whole division were going, I presume, and the 21st Brigade. We'll drop the East Africans for the moment. 21st Brigade were going with them.
Yes.
What about the move? What role did you have in organising the move then?
I moved pretty much with the battalion, but when we got to the far end, I had the job of offloading the battalion stores, including ammunition and so on, and loading them in Chittagong. I mean, that was a rather unpleasant job, working, organising work in the hold of a rather hot and old ship in Chittagong Harbour was not very, very good. And in fact, I think it was directly responsible for the fact that I got malaria and hepatitis about a week afterwards.
Were you still in the Chittagong area, or had you move off?
We were within, I can't quite remember how far we were from Chittagong, but the battalion was about 10 miles away from Chittagong.
So still, and that's India, isn't it? Is Chittagong in India? Or
it was East Bengal then. It's now Bangladesh.
And this was round about June or July. You're not quite sure which.
Yes. I think we're now certainly in July. Yes.
Right. And so what were the symptoms of the two together? Because individually they're not nice. Together?
Horrid. Actually, by this time I had moved to brigade headquarters. Brigade, I think it was one or two people with illness, and so I needed to replace it and also to look after the defence of brigade headquarters.
Did you take your platoon with you, or would you?
Still my old platoon or
a new one, a defence platoon.
Brigade headquarters, but unfortunately, when I got to brigade headquarters, I only had about 3 or 4 days there before I went down with this mixture of recurrence of malaria and infective hepatitis.
Now, how bad was that?
I think my temperature went up to 105 or something like that, and I really wasn't capable of doing anything. But on the other hand, the medical services were very good, and I was rushed into hospital in Chittagong by sampan, if I remember rightly, at that time, along the rivers. And then after 3 or 4 days there, it was an unfortunate combination because definitely hepatitis, to treat hepatitis, you might harm the malaria, or perhaps I should say help the malaria. But in any case, I had really just to sit back and wait for it to get better. And for 3 or 4 days, I was put on a hospital ship and found myself in Madras. The difficulty, of course, I found then was that our move had not as yet been noticed in the press, and I was unable to state publicly what my unit was, and had in fact to say that my company was, that I was from 81 Company Tuddy, which was a rather, 81 was the brigade number, the number of the senior brigade in the division, and Tuddy had been the code word for the move. But it was unfortunate. Tuddy didn't really suggest that when I said that, that was where I came from, that it was absolutely unbelievable.
So they accept. Did they try and send you back to Ceylon? Or
yes, I think I was told I had to have 6 months. And I didn't object too strongly. Although I had been rushed into the hospital, it was very difficult to get into the hospital. We stopped being paid in Ceylon and couldn't get money in India as yet. And so, although going up to the hills in Uti was very agreeable, it was also rather a strain financially. At the end of it, I was told, yes, East Africa must go back to East African base in Ceylon. And of course, that was not what I wanted to do. I had a job, but I knew we were going up to Burma. And so I insisted that I was not going back to Ceylon, where I probably just became an element in the reinforcements. And eventually I managed to get up to Calcutta by train, and then by train from Calcutta up to the Brahmaputra and round to join the brigade, which was now operating not in the Arakan, which was the area nearest to Bangladesh, but on the Chinwin.
Is that the Kabul Valley? Were they actually?
The Kabul Valley was ran down parallel to the Chinwin.
And that's where they were?
That's where they were, yes.
Now, what could you tell us that you rejoined Brigade Headquarters there, 21st East African Brigade. Could you tell us the setup at Brigade Headquarters? I mean, McNab was still in charge, I presume.
Yes.
And could you just go through the officers that they had and what their roles were and then what your role was as well?
Yes. Moving with us, we had a brigade major who was really in charge of the whole brigade headquarters. With us, we had a staff captain who looked after the sort of administrative side, and an intelligence officer. There should have been a transport officer, but he had developed tick typhus and departed somewhere else. Gone off on sick leave. We had a brigade army service corps officer who was mainly responsible for the rations. And these, I think, would be the most important officers in the permanent ones. So I was technically brigade liaison officer, but I had the job of brigade orderly officer, which was in fact a permanent one.
Well, let's look at your proper job first. What was your proper job meant to be as brigade liaison officer? What was the function it meant to be a brigade liaison officer?
Well, it would have been normally to keep in touch with the battalion and suppose times to take orders from brigade to the battalion.
And that was just your battalion, or was it all of the battalions?
Each battalion had a separate brigade liaison officer. There should have been two others. In fact, as it developed, I was functioned on paper brigade liaison officer, but really was brigade orderly officer, which curious enough seems to be a job that is never actually put as a formal appointment.
So your job was, is there anything else about the liaison job before we go into the orderly? I mean,
at that time, not really. because then...
Right, look, this job as brigade orderly. What did that... What exactly was your role as... you did both, obviously, at the same time, I presume. You carried on.
In point of fact, the brigade liaison officer was the appointment. The job was then brigade orderly.
Now, what did you have to do as brigade orderly officer? The full range of duties, so to speak.
Yes, well, it would have been normally the defence and looking after the escadrille, who were, there were a lot of others that would have been dispatch riders and would have been able to use anything that needed wheels and so on. All the escadrille who functioned at brigade headquarters were, I suppose, technically under.
So you commanded the defence platoon and the Askaris, the African personnel.
Yes. And then I found that we were, when I reached them, they were just about to move across from the Kabar to the near the Chinwin. And I found that I had to organise the loading of the brigade headquarters. We had quite a lot of equipment we had to take with us. Everything we needed ourselves, we had to carry.
Now, this would normally have been the job of the transport officer who was not there?
Exactly. Yes.
I presume.
Right.
And how did you go about that?
Well, really, to begin with, I had to try to load mules, which was. I'd never met a mule before, but I found that there were patterns of how you loaded things. They were never approved of by the then mule officer, we had a mule, an animal transport company attached to us, headed by a very irascible man who it was very difficult to please. But I found that usually if one took about half an hour longer than was expected, one could get the mules loaded up.
What was the difficulty with loading mules?
It was very difficult to get the kind of saddles on with so that the loads were perfectly even and not beyond the 100 pounds or so that mule was left capable of carrying. So if one didn't get it right, then a load of, say, about half a dozen picks and shovels could detach itself and be very awkward for the mule and for everybody else. And they are, of course, strange creatures in a way. They are violently opposed initially to cooperating, but after the initial period, they are remarkable creatures. They walk at the same pace as a man, the one we had, and in fact, they would go anywhere that we could go. They had the additional advantage with this recording. We never quite tested this. They never drink water which was not drinkable. But in fact, we always, of course, had water, had tablets to put in our drinking water to try and prevent any further ailments.
You didn't use horses then?
No. And horses, I later discovered from practical experience, are less good, in fact, in jungle conditions, and when you're actually walking with them, somehow or other, they didn't seem to be so well made for carrying things, and moreover, their tendency when going up hills to want to rush, which made it very difficult if you're leading one, and if they were going downhill, they tended to go very slow, and so that either way, it was rather unfortunate. A mule walked at the same pace pretty regularly.
Now, you were organising the mules and transport for the headquarters, just the brigade, headquarters. Not for the battalions and everything else. Just now, you arrived. When did you arrive? I should have checked that. When did you actually join them in the Kabul Valley? Would that be December or earlier? Because you were in sick leave.
Early in October.
Right. And what exactly was the situation in the Kabul Valley as far as the brigade was concerned? They'd already arrived before, a month or so before, I presume. Yes. And what was actually happening?
They were, in fact, one battalion with, I think, some attached smaller units. The 4th Uganda KEF had, in fact, left the brigade and started moving eastwards.
Was that from the Kabul Valley towards the Chin?
Towards the Chin, yes. I think the whole area tended to be called the Kabul. And then it meant that there were about 3 or 4 ranges of hills running parallel between the Kabul and the Chin, which meant that if you were crossing that area, you were either going uphill or downhill. Through fairly thick jungle and the monsoons still on.
Now, I'll come back to the monsoon. So you'd also have your battalion, the 1st NRR, and then I believe you had the 2nd Nyasaland KL. Where were they? The 4th had gone forward. Where were the other 2?
Not so much forward as sideways. The 1st NRR and 2nd were preparing to go on down the actual Kabul Valley. We were following what call, the 2nd KER were then going to follow us, they follow Brigade Headquarters to join the 4th KER, and then we concentrated with 2 battalions, Brigade Headquarters, at a place near Chinba Valley, where the Japanese had a strong point.
Now, what about the jungle conditions and the climate in this area when you joined them, Octoberish?
At that time, it was pretty unpleasant.
In what way?
The ground was mud. The Kabul Valley had officially got a road on it on which jeeps could sometimes operate, but in fact, as soon as the rain came on, all motor transport stopped. We made that rule because otherwise they just got bogged down and progress was impossible anyway. So we realised that to be able to go on steadily and certainly to go over to the Chinburn area, it was quite impossible to use any kind of motor transport. We had to rely what we could carry and what the mules could carry. The jungle itself was rather less impenetrable than the area we practiced in Ceylon. It in fact had a large amount of bamboo, and that is tremendously valuable because bamboo will practically give you everything you want. If you're bivouacking at night, if you have a ground sheet, you can rig up a perfectly acceptable cover with bamboo. You could even, with a banger, chop bamboo at a certain point and give yourself, or a couple of points, give yourself something from which you can drink. We were lucky, I think, in having bamboo there. Again, at night, where in Europe you might well have surrounded yourself by barbed wire, we surrounded ourselves with bits of bamboo with very sharp ends. And if anyone were trying to sneak into our area at night, they would find it very unpleasant indeed. And so we usually carry, they need to carry, you know, it's about a dozen each. We'd have a dozen. They're very, very heavy, but we'd shove them in. And this collection of askari, shoving in bamboo, you provided yourself with a pretty safe circumference, really.
Now, what about, was the monsoon still going? I'm not quite sure when the monsoon...
Yes.
What was the monsoon like?
It was very unpleasant when it was on. I think, I'm not sure what the rainfall would be, but I think something like 6 or 7 inches a day was perfectly possible. One just got wet, or was wet pretty well all the time. I was lucky. It was the beginning, just about to ease off. And that made a great amount of difference. Because, you know, when you're trying to march from A to B and you're going sinking into mud well above the top of your boots every time, it's really exhausting. We found, I think, 4 miles a day. And 10 minutes every half hour instead of 10 minutes every hour made it just about possible. The rivers, of course, were in flood, the Chongs, as they were known, and there we tended to, the engineers very often were able to get across ropes which you held on to when you were crossing the river.
What was that like?
Well, interesting. On the whole, probably much better than having to walk around. but the, luckily, the, I can't remember anyone being lost. The Chongs were always unpredictable. I remember on the way to China Brigade headquarters, we stopped one afternoon when the, by a Chong to go swimming. I realised that somebody was felt. It was only 2 or 3 feet away, but he couldn't actually swim. He couldn't. And he had walked off the solid bit and found himself with absolutely nothing to stand on. So I probably saved his life by pulling his head off. But there was nothing heroic about it at all. It was just one of those things that happened.
What about supplies?
Supplies could not have been brought up over land, but by now the army had Dakotas, which I think DC had to get what their official number was. But they were planes capable of carrying about 30 men, but they carried quite a lot of stores, and they all had open doors from which stores were kicked with parachutes attached. The parachutes were cotton for most things. You knew that ammunition was coming up with your suit. And from a purely personal point of view, one always thought that an ammunition drop was a good thing, because part of a silk parachute made a very pleasant thing to sleep in. The difficulty, of course, was that they tried nobody to get in 2 flights a day, which meant that about midday you might get a drop. The second drop would probably come about 5:30 or 6, and unless one got it in, the Japanese were quite liable to come and get it instead. We didn't actually see them much, but you were very conscious of them. They